This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2022, held at Faith Builders on August 2 through 5.
Good morning. Welcome back for session 2 of Teaching in a Loud World. You know, in events like this, we get so full so fast, or at least I do. You go to session after session, there's so much stuff. And the stuff starts to run together, and you wonder how you're ever going to remember it all, and those sorts of questions. And something I've found that has been a blessing for me is some of the stuff you do just kind of forget. But it comes back at the right moment then, when you find yourself in a situation, you remember something from Teachers Week 2022 that helps give you some ideas of what to do in that moment. I think the Lord works that way sometimes for us. Well, this morning we're going to look at personal organization and how that can help us to teach in a loud world. And I'm wondering this morning, you don't have to answer this out loud, just think about it to yourself here and give yourself an answer. If you are to give yourself a rating out of 10 on how personally organized you are, rating out of 10. Do you have a number? How many of you would say that you're a 7 plus in personal organization? There should be some of you, you're teachers, right? I'm glad we speak to a humble audience here. Now, I want you to think about your personal organization, though, because there are ways in which every one of us can increase our personal organization, and therefore our effectiveness, I think. And so as you think about your personal organization, is there one thing that you could do, something that you're currently not doing, that if you did that on a regular basis, that one thing, it would significantly impact your personal life, how you get things done, or where you store things, or whatever. Can you think of one thing that you could change? Do you have something in your mind? Maybe something that you've been trying to work on for some time already? Now think about that one thing if you've identified something. And we're talking about personal organization, and personal organization can pertain to different categories in our life. You know, there's time management, and then there's tasks that we have to do and we have to remember to do, and there's data that we're getting. That's this week. We're accumulating all this data, and of course as teachers we're always studying and reading, and we hear that story and we want to remember it. So there's all this data. There's stuff, of course. There's always stuff, right? Your desk, your car, your closet, all this stuff. How are you going to personally organize that? And of course, there might be other categories. But as we think about these categories, time management, tasks, data, stuff, which category would you say the one thing that you need to change is in? So how many of you would say it's in time management? Okay. We're seeing a theme already. How many of you would say that it's probably in tasks? How many of you would say it's data? The data you receive. And how about stuff? All right. I think some of you put your hand up for more than one. That's good. Well, really, all of these have powerful potential. Both, they can clutter our lives and diminish our effectiveness, or they can clarify our lives, and they can make us more effective. They can maximize our energies if we find a way to organize them so that we don't have to keep thinking about them or being frustrated by them. John Maxwell says, "A life in which anything goes will ultimately be a life in which nothing goes." In Stephen R. Covey's book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, I referenced it yesterday, and today's thoughts, a lot of today's thoughts come from the book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I would highly recommend this as a read. It was revolutionary for me personally. I read this 4 years ago, this book 4 years ago, and there was significant things from it that I've applied in my own life and felt like they have dramatically influenced my personal organization and habits. And the big phrase in this book that he mentions different times is organize and execute around priorities. Organize and execute around priorities. And he goes on to say that he does a lot of research and he relies on research companies to do research for him. And he says that 80% of your time, 80% of your time is going to be spent on about 20% of your priorities. And if that's true, that 80% of your time is going to be spent on 20% of your priorities, then it makes a lot of sense that we make sure that that time is being spent on the 20% that deserves that amount of time. In Ephesians chapter 5, we read these familiar verses. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Again, we'll just open it up here for a moment. Are there things that stand out to you from this passage? Thinking about personal organization, think about teaching in a loud world. Best use of time over and above just good use of time. You know, I said that I'm speaking to a humble audience, but did you know that you're expected to be wise? You know, it says that you're going to walk, not as the unwise, but as the wise. That's you. You're supposed to be the wise. You're supposed to be the ones who make the best use of time. And why is it? Because the days are evil, and we're pretty aware of that, I think, if we look around us. There's another verse in the Gospel of John that I was just really struck by recently. In John chapter 17, verse 4, it says this, and it's Jesus, it's talking about Jesus, and he says, I glorified you on earth, having accomplished, so this is Jesus, if you know John 17, it's the high priestly prayer, Jesus is talking to the Father, and so this is his intimate conversation with his Father, and Jesus is speaking, and he says, I glorified you on earth, having accomplished the work that you gave me to do. And if you stop and think about the ramifications of this simple little verse here, you know, were all the sick people healed while Jesus was here on earth? Were all of the deaf and the lame healed? The beggars given a house and a job and so forth? A fresh new start. Were all of the spiritually bound people delivered while Jesus walked on earth? Obviously not. And yet here in this verse, it says, I accomplished the work. It implies that Jesus' work was complete, that it was finished. You know, he was here only 33 years. It's kind of fascinating to think about Jesus being on earth for only 33 years. There was so much yet to be done. And when we look at his ministry was actually only approximately 3 years. And yet still here we are 2,000 years later talking about Jesus, worshiping and following Jesus, whole groups of people doing that. He changed the world. And yet we affirm he accomplished the work that he came to do. And the reason I think Jesus can say, I accomplished the work, is because he knew what his priority was. Why had he come? He came and accomplished that. There was many other things to be done. And so perhaps this can give us some reassurance. The list of possible things, good things, even really good things, that could get done will actually never be completed by you. Not in this life. But this does not mean that your work cannot be accomplished. The crucial admonition here, as we also saw in Ephesians 5, seems to be that we allot our time on being on the things that we should be doing. And so we're starting here with this category of time management. We'll spend some time here and then move on to some of the other categories as well. Time is a difficult thing to manage, isn't it? You know, you come to the end of a day and you're genuinely unsure, like, what did I actually accomplish today? Somebody asks you, so what did you do today? And you're like, well, I guess I taught my classes, and I'm not sure what all filled my day. Like, I had an opening there after lunch, but suddenly that was gone. And then after the school day finished, what did I even do? Like, 2 hours went by, and I'm not even sure I accomplished anything. And this is really inevitably going to happen with a job like teaching. You're going to have things, and I liked how Stephen put it this morning, was it something like interruptions are your job. And so it's kind of comforting to know that there's some of those things. But I think that there's also the dark side of it that we can use. We can use that of like, well, that's just how my job is going to be. And it can hide, actually, a lack of intentionality, a lack of clear prioritization. Charles Hummel wrote an article called The Tyranny of the Urgent, and he uses this illustration in it. He says, for me, hardware stores have a strong attraction. I'm fascinated by the variety of tools and the gadgets. Maybe some of you can identify with this. Suppose that today I need a new electric drill for an important home project. And I remember that there's a special cash and carry price of $17.90. So I put a $20 bill in my wallet and I head for the hardware store. But just inside the door, I spot a set of 5 unusual screwdrivers on sale. They're for $3.95, so I go ahead and purchase them. Several counters further, a new kind of wrench catches my eye, and I spend another $6.90 on that. And when at last I reach the electric drills, I discover I no longer have enough money to buy what I came for. If I had the honesty to return home and tell my family my sad story, how much sympathy would I get? What would they think of my excuse I didn't have enough money for the drill? At the moment, the screwdrivers and wrench seemed so important, but in the end, they robbed me of the drill I really needed. Many of us who resist spending our money this way are not equally careful in the use of our time. We spend hours on impulse of an unexpected opportunity or demand, and then we complain that our time flies away, leaving some important tasks unfinished. And so the key, of course, again, is we have to prioritize. We have to organize around our priorities, as Covey says. And we talked about this yesterday, so I'm not going to belabor the point. But I think it's just a recognition that we're finite human beings. Like, let's acknowledge it and admit the way God created us, right? We're finite. We're limited. We're not going to accomplish all. I mean, if Jesus accomplished the work that he gave him, and yet we can identify things that seem like they could have been done in his lifetime, who are we to think that we're going to accomplish all of these things, all of the things that come our way? And so a scattershot approach to time management is going to mean that we hardly accomplish anything of importance, because lots of things are going to keep coming, possibilities and opportunities. And Hummel goes on to give 5 steps to time management, and he basically uses really the same concept as people spend on organizing, budgeting their money. How many of you budget your money? Okay, a good number of you budget your money. If you're like me, then the way to get that done in your life is to marry the right person. So it's fantastic. Melissa looks after our budgeting and does a fantastic job with it. But he gives these 5 steps. First, he says, decide what is important. They're really quite logical. First, decide what is important. And we're thinking about this with time. Decide what is important. And then determine, where is your time currently being spent? Where am I now spending my time? And then budget your hours. Make the changes slowly, choosing an area or two to focus on at a time. Follow through with it, and then evaluate how it's going. Is there something else that I should do? And so it's really not about getting those five steps worded exactly on your paper. It's like a logical step of saying, what is it that matters most? And then it's saying, what am I currently doing now? And then it's saying, how can I move towards getting those important things being the things I'm spending my time on? When I began teaching, a wise man told me, I actually can't remember for sure who it is. I think it was Melvin Lehman, but I'm not sure. He's a wise man, so we'll attribute it to him. You know, he said this, you know, a teacher's work is never really done. There would always be more lesson preparation, more study, more planning that could be done to increase the power of your class. At some point, you will simply have to quit and be okay with what you have prepared. Apparently, the concept of work expands to fill the available time is called the Parkinson's principle, apparently. And you know, I think about it in terms of when we go to a restaurant and we sit down and order our food. I'm one of these people who will look at that menu and won't decide until the waitress comes and says, "Do you have your order?" And then probably I'll still say, "Yeah, we're ready to order. Why don't you start with them? Work your way around the table here." And then I'll make a call at the last minute, right? It's like game time decision making. But work expands to fill all of the available time. And I think you've probably, if you've taught at all, you've probably found that with your lesson preparation, for example. And so this man, perhaps Melvin, went further and gave this example with lesson preparation, which has been so helpful for me and has been an example that I have, or something that I have referenced repeatedly in thinking about time management with something like lesson prep that doesn't really ever come to an end. And so he drew a chart, a line graph, like this. And he said, on the bottom here is time invested. And on this side is reward, or you could say payback for your efforts. And so then this is a line graph that helps you to think about the amount of time I'm putting in, how much reward am I getting for it. And so we're thinking here about the example of lesson preparation. You're preparing a lesson. And so if we say you're preparing a history lesson, for example, and you're spending time studying it, you know, if we were to say that you, for whatever reason, got up in front of your history class and had spent zero time preparation, like you opened your book for the first time while standing in front of the class. I hope that's not happened to you. But you open your book there, then we would say you've spent zero amount of minutes investing, and so there was zero payback for it, right? Now, a little bit of time invested in preparing for your lesson has huge payback, right? Like, let's say you had a really busy night and some other things came up and whatever. You only had 15 minutes to look at that history lesson before the next day. You spent 15 minutes reading over the lesson, looking at what the students are going to do. You are way better prepared to lead that class than if you spent 0 minutes, right? And so the payback for those initial 15 minutes is really significant. And it still keeps going up like that as you spend amounts of time. And I'm really hesitant to even put amounts of time here because it varies so much depending on the subject matter, the amount of content it is, if you've taught it before, and so forth. There's a lot of variables with that. But the initial amount of time you spend into it, whether it's 15 minutes or a half hour or whatever, an hour, is significant payback. Your class is just getting better and better. You know, when you get to the front of the room, you're feeling more and more prepared by it. But somewhere along the way, in your preparation, the payback actually really starts to level off, right? Like, you start to, we'll throw numbers, but don't get too tied to the numbers. You know, if you spend an hour on your history lesson preparation, and that was significant, it really made the class better. But then, somewhere along the way, at like an hour and a half or 2 hours or whatever, the payback for it, like your class, it might still be getting a bit better, but it's actually not getting that much better. Like your students aren't even going to notice that you spend an hour and a half instead of an hour or whatever. The payback starts to become just less and less. It really starts to level off. And so the concept as a teacher in thinking about time management is to try to find this spot right here and then stop, right? If you can find that place where you get maximum payback without getting caught in all of the details, that can be a really freeing way of preparing for a lesson. You have another lesson to prepare, probably three other lessons or four other lessons to prepare. And so it can be a helpful tool in thinking about time management. Stephen Covey uses four quadrants to split all of the tasks. And I'm not exactly sure if this is original with him or not, but he splits all of our tasks into four quadrants. And he says that in these quadrants, we can name them urgent and not urgent, important and not important. And you know how these quadrants work, right? You take the two that apply to it. So in box one here, we have urgent tasks that are also important. They're urgent and important. Over here, we have not urgent tasks that are still important. They're not urgent, but they're important. And here we have urgent, not important, and here we have not urgent, not important. And at first, you might think that these words, urgent and important, are the same thing. They seem like the same thing, but they're not. Urgent means it demands our immediate attention right now. And oftentimes urgent tasks, actually, when you look at them carefully, they have to do with someone else's agenda, what someone else is wanting rather than the things that you've carefully prioritized yourself. So if we think about some examples, a lot of marketing strategies use urgency to try to sell their product, right? You've probably felt that in marketing strategies. You think about coupons. They've got the run out date is probably the end of the week or whatever. Come and do it right now because it's going. It's a limited time offer or whatever. And so they use urgency to try to make you feel like you should do it. Our phones are great for making things feel urgent even if they're not important. You know, they tell us right away, we got a message. And most of the messages probably really aren't important, or at least not important now. They don't deserve the time right now. So phones or emails, whenever it goes off. Even some coworker interruptions can feel urgent, but not necessarily important. Some coworkers probably do this more than others. And that one takes some careful analysis as to when it's important and when it's not, because it is important at times to be interacting with your coworkers. But some of that can feel urgent. It can feel like they're kind of here in my classroom, but it's not actually the most important thing that should be getting done right then. Important, on the other hand, is things that have to do with results. It's something that really matters towards what you are trying to accomplish, what you've decided are your priorities. And so it's built around what you value, your missions. Oftentimes, the things that are important might not have a deadline. They matter, but they're not tied necessarily to a deadline. And so if you think about something like, what do I want the dominant character trait of my students to be? You know, it's an important thing to think through. Like, what is it that I want to be developing in my students this year? And yet, the urgent things of like, I need to have a Kleenex box in my classroom, and I've got to have the papers and the right notebooks and all of those things take up all our time, and we end up not spending time on thinking like, what's the dominant character trait that I want to be developing in my students this year? For myself, as a leader of a staff team, one that really matters for me is, how can the staff team support and work together? How can we do that really well this year? How are we going to do that really well this year? You see how there's actually no time limit on that. There's no deadline to it. And so it's the thing that can get forgotten, but it really matters. It's important. And so we often react to urgent matters. They pop up in our face. and sometimes they're kind of pleasing to do. And then the important matters actually require acting rather than reacting. But Covey goes on further with these quadrants, and he labels them. In the first one, he says this one here is crisis. This is the crisis category. You know, it's urgent and it's important. It really has to happen now, and it really matters. And he said that according to his research and Merrill's, Covey and Merrill's research, businesses, he was looking at businesses, businesses average about 25 to 30% of their time right here, urgent and important tasks. In quadrant two, this is the quadrant, he would call this one not urgent but important, and he would say that this one is called quality. This is the category called quality. And when they analyzed businesses, they found that businesses spent about 15% of their time doing things that were important but not urgent. In category three, or quadrant three, he calls this one deception. Because they're urgent tasks that are right in your face calling for your attention, but they're not important. They don't deserve to be done, or at least not right there. Businesses spent 50 to 60% of their time in the urgent, not important category. And then in quadrant four, this is called waste, because you can see it's not urgent and it's not important. And here they found businesses to spend 2 to 3% of their time, which seems like perhaps a surprisingly low amount of time. But these are businesses that are strategically thinking through how they want to operate. Now analyze your life. Think about the quadrants in your life and your time management. Where are you spending your time? Does it fit with those percentages? Those aren't necessarily the ideal percentages. In fact, they aren't the ideal percentages. I suspect that in most of our personal lives, quadrant four is probably higher than 2 to 3%. Would that be right? I'm guessing quadrant two is quite possibly even less than 15%. Now, businesses are strategic in how they're thinking and planning and growing, perhaps more than we are individually about how we are wanting to live our lives. And so it's possible quadrant two is even smaller. You know, living in quadrants three and four means living, living an irresponsible life. You know, effective people, they minimize quadrants three and four while shrinking quadrant one as much as possible by spending more time in quadrant two, quality. The not urgent, but the important categories. And the only place to get more time for quadrant two, not urgent, important, is to take it from quadrants three and four. Because you can't take it from quadrant one. Quadrant one is important things that have to happen right now. They're urgent and important. So you can't take it from quadrant one. You have to take it from quadrant three and four. The things that feel urgent but aren't important, or the things that aren't urgent and aren't important. Effective people, over time, will shrink quadrant one by spending more time in quadrant two. Oftentimes the crises start to diminish as you start doing better planning and forward thinking. So, Covey says, effective people are not problem-minded people. They are opportunity-minded. They feed opportunities, which starves problems. One more thing on time management is saying no. Saying no, making careful commitments. And consider what you're saying no to every time you say yes to something. When you say yes, you know, I've heard some people say, I just find it so hard to say no. Somebody asked me something, I just find it so hard to say no. I know I want to say no, but I find it so hard to say no. Just consider that you are saying no. Even if you say yes, you're saying no somewhere else. Something else is getting cut if you say yes to the person in front of you. So I would encourage you, something that's really helpful is to get somewhere quiet before making a decision, you know, the voice is in front of you telling you, say, I've got to think about that. And when they're not in your face, you can realize, no, that doesn't fit with where I'm supposed to be spending my time. Okay, we're going to spend the last few minutes here looking at tasks and data, that sort of thing, events. And so everybody is going to do this a little differently. I took a class where Stephen Brubaker talked about some of this very personal organization stuff that was really formational for myself. And he gave examples of how he does it. And I left there and went and tried the way he did it. And it didn't work for me. And I adjusted it until it found I found what worked for me. And I would just say that's going to be how it's for you as well. You're probably not going to do it like I do it, which is good. Find the way that works best for you. For myself, I have, so we think about our tasks. And the big thing with tasks is that all tasks must be recorded in one place. As a teacher, you are going to have tasks coming to you throughout the day. You know, a fellow class or a fellow staff member is going to say, hey, can you check into something? Or can you call whatever? Or could you send me that whatever at the end of the day? You're going to keep getting these things. Students are going to ask you for help with something or whatever. And so putting all of those tasks into one spot is the key. Because when you put it into one place, the only thing you have to remember is the one place where you go look rather than remembering all of the tasks, right? And I mean, I'm a forgetful sort of person. And so this goes with tasks, this goes with calendar events and so forth. You know, I remember when I was a child, I was notorious for leaving my Bible at church. And I would just forget, you know, I'd put it on the shelf or whatever, or on the bench, and I'd just forget. And I remember my mom saying to me one time, you know, Joey, you have to remember. Like, we have to find a way to help you remember. You're forgetting so often. And I just remember in that moment that helpless feeling of like, yeah, but that's the problem. Like, I'm forgetting. So how do I remember if I'm forgetting? And I don't know if it was then, or I think it was sometime later, that I was the idea of reducing the number of things that I need to remember is the key to helping you remember. And so reduce the number of things you need to remember. For me, it's one place that I need to go to. Go there to remember all of the other things. I don't have to remember the details, because as those details come, I put them to that one place. For a long time, I had sticky notes all over my desk. And eventually, I switched over to OneNote. Some of you might be familiar with OneNote. So I went to OneNote. How many of you are familiar with OneNote? Use Microsoft products. OneNote is basically like notebooks. If you're a paper and pen sort of person, which is an option, you can do that for being a one place to put your tasks. Paper and pen works fine. OneNote is basically like that. You have your different notebooks right here, and you just create your different notebooks, and then within your notebooks, you can create folders along this side, and then within the folders, you can create pages, as many pages as you want. For myself, I created a work in progress folder, and then I have a current to-do list. And this isn't very up-to-date. I don't use it near as much through the summer. But during the school year, this page is open every single day. Every single day. And as things come, I put it here. The other thing I do with this is I organize it then. I've made this into a chart here that I can put letters along this side. So if I decide that this thing matters most, I put an A in it. And then this thing is next, I put a B in it and so forth, a C and so forth. And then you can just come up to the table and you can put it in alphabetical order, and then it puts the blank ones first, and then the A, B, C, and so forth in that order, because things change on the order of when you want to do it. That's what I found discouraging about paper and pencil, is I was always changing like when things had to happen, and it took so much. Anyhow, this is OneNote for task list, and we're going to run out of time here, so I'm going to move quickly. Data storage is another thing. The key with tasks is put it in one place, whether that's a notepad or that's a Word document. I know some people use Word document. Some people use Asana, I think, as a to-do list sort of thing where you can check it off. I tried that, it didn't fit me, but again, you're gonna have to find what works for you. I use OneNote for task lists as well as data storage. Other people might use Word. How many of you would say you use Word for data storage? You just have like Word documents and save them into folders and stuff. That works fine as well. I use OneNote for a lot of that stuff too. So Countryside Christian School data is something that I started when I became principal. And here's like one folder on how-tos, because I said I'm forgetful. I don't remember how to, you know, download the photocopier driver for all new staff. And so I have a document here on how-tos for the photocopier. And I have a document on here for how to log into the internet for new staff. And I have a document in here for government reporting. And I have a document in here for how to connect to the internet. Maybe I said that example, and so forth. All of these things, because I forget. And so this is a data storage thing for me. The other cool thing with data storage on a device like this is that you can search. So if I search here, and say for example, here was a Caleb Weber search. He's our maintenance guy at school. And so if I am like, I know that it was something I recorded that had to do with Caleb Weber, where is it? Then I can just search Caleb Weber. And all of the places where Caleb Weber pops up show up here, and so I can find it. You know, that's really helpful if you saved a story, for example. You saved a story in here that you heard one time, and you can't remember the title of the story, you remember a bit of what it was about, you can type some things in there and search for it. So, some people, again, are going to use like a filing cabinet where you keep your things in a filing cabinet. Other people are going to find something like this helpful. And then your calendar. You know, events is something a little bit different than tasks. You know, if I tried to put all of my events on my task list, just on my task list, just put them in there, then I'm going to forget them because I'm not going to see them at the right time. I check my task list every day, and so it can be helpful as a reminder. But anything that is specific to a certain time, I have to be at this place at a certain time, goes into my calendar. I use two different calendars. Again, some of you are going to be the paper and pen sort of person, and that is perfectly fine. There should be no shame in using paper and pen. That is a really effective way. Buy yourself a calendar, one that has nice pictures on it and will make you want to look at it. Put it somewhere where you're going to see it all the time and write the stuff into the calendar so that you just always look at the calendar for where you need to be when. I use Outlook calendars for my school stuff, and I use Google calendars for my personal life stuff. My wife and I have our calendar synced on our phones, and so anything that happens outside of school hours for myself goes into my Google calendar so that she knows where I'm going to be if it's something outside of school hours. If it's anything happening during school hours, it goes into Outlook calendar like this. So this blue one is my school calendar. And then the school itself has a calendar here too, which I can overlay. You know, you can put these two together in order to see what's going to happen on each day and so forth, or you can split them apart. So again, I say this as an example, and I really am serious when I say don't feel like you have to do it this way. You know, when Stephen Brubaker gave his talk a couple of years back, and I was listening, I was just like, man, I need that. Like, I don't have personal organization. I don't have a way of organizing. And so it started me on a journey. I tried some of the methods he gave, some of the examples he gave. Some of them I just didn't find fit the way that I thought, the way that I remembered things. And so I've come to here. I don't expect that you folks will all find this to be the most effective way for you either. I guess the thing I leave you with this morning is an encouragement to think through your life. Think through the priorities you have and how could you organize in a better way in order to increase your effectiveness. Covey said, organize and execute around priorities. He said that you spend 80% of your time on 20% of those priorities. And if that's true, then it makes a lot of sense for us as followers of Jesus to make sure that that 80% is spent on the most important 20% of our priorities. I hope that you find personal organization, a stop and a look at your personal organization, helps you to become a more effective servant in Christ's kingdom. Thank you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.